I'm Jane Johnson, and this is the Careering into Motherhood podcast. If you're a regular listener to this series, you'll know that we've been running a really big focus on female confidence, with weekly episodes and loads of articles written by professional coaches over on our website. If you are thinking to yourself, what website, then go and check it out straight after this, www.careeringintomotherhood.com. Now, when I first met today's guest, Nerys Hitel, I was just struck by her courage to continuously reinvent herself. She seemed to think nothing of just jumping on a plane with her family and moving overseas. And she was so passionate about the same causes as us at Careering into Motherhood that she was trying to change things, not just back where she grew up or where she went to university, but all around the world every time she took a new role. And I thought that took courage and, of course, confidence. Living a global nomad type of life is something that's always really appealed to me. So I asked Nerys if she'd come on the podcast. I wanted to know how she managed all of these transitions and changes just so naturally. Well, Nerys, I am absolutely delighted to have you on the podcast. You joined our Facebook group quite some time ago, but I think we were just sitting there quietly in your phone. You weren't really, you know, too familiar with what we do, but you've joined our career coaching platform. And when we had our first conversation, I just remember coming off that call and going, oh my word, this woman is like the ultimate, you know, caterpillar, chrysalis, butterfly, continually reinventing yourself. Can you talk me through? Let's start with what you know, your first job. What was your first job?
Okay. Well, my very, very first job was when I was 15 and I stacked shelves in the supermarket. But after finishing university, my very first job was actually offered to me by one of my professors. And it was as a junior lecturer. I can never quite find the perfect translation, but I was involved with running tutorial groups within the interdisciplinary social science department, which is where I studied at the University of Utrecht.
And then from there, you somehow wound up in the NHS, didn't you?
Well, yeah, eventually I did, yes. Wow. That was through, I first ended up in the UK. So as I said, I studied in the Netherlands. And then I was looking for work. And I spent a lot of time in the library, university library, looking for jobs. And then I came across a position as a children's social worker in Hertfordshire County Council. And I...
there you go. You've gone from stacking shelves in the Netherlands to winding up in Hertfordshire, where I grew up, so I know it very well. But it's not the most natural next step.
No, but it was well. So this is I don't know what to call it. I was looking for work, and it seemed to tick a couple of boxes. Never mind that it was in Hertfordshire, but I thought, okay, I studied interdisciplinary social sciences, and I want to work with people. Even though I didn't quite study social work, so there was a mistranslation there as well. I think the understanding is that my master's in social sciences is equivalent to a master's in social work. So,
so you got a job by accident.
Yeah, that's a really bad thing about social work, right? But I don't know if it was by accident. I mean, I went through a proper recruitment process.
Yeah, of course. Of course, but I just love this.
I know, it's really awful. But so I did have experience working with children, but not quite in the context of social work. So throughout university, I also had the part-time jobs at various nurseries, working with kids from 0 to 4 years old. So I did have practical experience, but not so much in social work. And I was completely open and transparent about this. I mean, you can't make this
stuff. No, of course not.
Yeah, no. It's I looking back, I'm a little bit surprised, to be honest with you. But as I said, I was open and transparent about it. And but I ended up as a social worker in Hertfordshire, dealing with quite complex cases very early on, soon after I started. Of course, I had some training and mentoring and body system and all of that, all quite full on. And from there, I went on to a domestic and sexual violence charity to work as a legal and advice caseworker. So that wasn't accidental in any shape or form. That really came about because of my work as a social worker. I realized that domestic violence was part of a lot of the cases on my caseload, and it wasn't adequately addressed, I felt. So there was the drive to move to that was to address the problem as and when people need it, and the support.
But that must have been really harrowing number of years. Yeah, I mean, how do you, coming home every night or whatever time of day it was, and then getting up and doing it all over again, what was it that drove you to, what did you do sort of energy-wise even?
No, harrowing is exactly how I would describe it, to be honest with you. And on so many levels, right? And you don't know, it's maybe being young, I just moved to Hertfordshire and, you know, just dealing with that transition to start off, right? That in itself can be quite challenging, even though...
Because you didn't grow up in Europe, did you?
No, well, I grew up, yeah, no, not, I didn't grow up in Europe. I grew up in the Caribbean, in Curaçao, and I went to the Netherlands when I was 18 to study. So I think because of that, it didn't really faze me that the job was in the UK. Right? So it was like, oh, well, I've made a much bigger move before, and I was 18, and I had no idea of, I've been to Europe on holiday, but no big deal. But it was a different transition, because in the Netherlands, I actually did have family, or I do have family in the Netherlands, and I do have some kind of a support network and a bit of context, the language, you know, Dutch is my second language. I spoke English as well, obviously, otherwise I wouldn't have gotten the job. But culturally, there was so much that I had to get used to. Right. So there's so many levels of having to adapt, like learning a new role, speaking the language, speaking English, because speaking the English that I have then was what I learned in university and no, not really in school and all of that, because I didn't speak English in university, but I had to practice and speak it on the phone with my clients. And then there's the content of the work that I was doing.
So it's funny, because at the start I said, you know, you are like this sort of continually evolving person, and you are. I mean, just listen, you've come from the Caribbean to the Netherlands to study to doing a job and winding up in Hertfordshire. And I mean, I don't know. I'm honestly in awe, because you seem to, I mean, to me, you sound incredibly courageous. I mean, do you identify as adventurous or courageous, or is it just something you get up and do every day?
So the funny thing is that there must be courage. There is courage somewhere. But I feel that a lot of my changes have almost been inevitable. For the very first one, the move from the Curaçao to the Netherlands, that's what most people who want to study at university in Curaçao do. Curaçao is a formal Dutch colony, and it's a small island, so if you want to study anything that's not offered in a local university, which only has a couple of subjects, people tend to go to the Netherlands. So my aunts, I have aunts who did it, I have other family members and people around me. So I think maybe 80% of my class who graduated from the equivalent of A-levels, we all got on the plane that summer. Yeah, that's what you do.
It was like the school bus.
Correct. Like, right, a train or whatever it is to other parts of the UK. No, we get on an airplane, on the jumbo jet, and then go to the Netherlands and end up somewhere. So moving countries in order to progress or achieve something in life, that's a given. That's sort of, yeah, it's sort of, nobody questions it really. In fact, I think in my generation, it was even, I think if people stayed in Curaçao, it would be like, oh, really, you're staying? So, yeah. So,
do you think you now take that forwards? Do you see yourself as staying where you are now? Or do you have a short, medium, long-term plan? Or is it very much just going with life?
It works out well, because my more recent moves, as I said, I'm currently in the Netherlands. We were in Hong Kong up until 2 months ago. And in the summer, we might move again. I ended up with a husband whose job also moves. So the fact that I did moved on my own has almost prepared me for this life that we are choosing to live as a family. Most recent move was actually quite difficult.
Was it? Why was that?
Because I actually, now I have a daughter, she was 5 years old, and Hong Kong is the only home she knows, even though she was born in the UK. We moved there when she was very young. And moving her and she not having that stability where, you know, or having to let her leave her friends behind and her school, that was really difficult for me.
Was it? And how, I'm really interested actually in how you broached that with her. Every child, every person, every human deals with change and things differently. But how you helped your daughter through that transition?
I think just allowing space for her to talk about it and express her anger and frustration. So
really, she was angry, was she?
And one particular, I think the first weekend that we started packing, and this move was a little bit, it happened, there wasn't a lot of lead time. I think we'd made the decision 6 weeks before we actually moved.
Wow.
and so I think about 4 weeks before we moved, my husband started packing and the house was in complete mess. And at some point she had a massive tantrum and she just said, it's unfair. I don't want to move. He really broke down and she was angry. So for me, it was just a case of listening to her and almost letting her know that it's okay to feel angry. It's okay to feel upset and sad, and because it is difficult and it is unsettling. And also once we arrived here, her complaining about the weather friends, and not sort of forcing her to feel happy, because the interesting thing is that we've been here for almost 2-3 months now and it's changing. She's sort of now realizing. And so for me, it's been a learning curve as well as a parent to experience what it's like for a 5-year-old to go through such a change. Because, she was very vocal about all the things she dislikes, about the fact that there are no leaves on the tree and it's always wet and cold. And that she doesn't want to have video calls because she thinks that we should take her back to her friends. And it really, really difficult. And I felt it as well very strongly. I think when we first spoke, I may have mentioned that it's hard. It's hard to be here again. But also seeing that now she's like, oh, I'm really happy that we're here. And
Really? So it was short-lived.
And I enjoy spending time with my cousin because I have family, as I said, in the Netherlands. And I miss my cousins. And it's so, and all of that. So
it's really interesting. Yeah. So you were working as a
domestic and sexual violence advice worker. Yeah.
It might sound like a stupid question, but what was it that drove you to change and move on from that?
Well, no, it's not. The change was quite significant as well. I mean, talking about reinventing myself. So I worked at a domestic and sexual violence charity for nearly seven years. And actually that career, the change started, I think probably when I was 2 years into my role there. So I moved there because to address domestic violence and support victims of domestic violence when they need it. But the other element of that role that I found very attractive was the fact that it was a legal and advice caseworker. And in my mind, I already planned to use that as a stepping stone for my own professional development to then move into law, make a transition.
Oh, really?
2 years into that job, approximately, I don't remember the timeline anymore, I actually did a law conversion course as well. So I continued working full-time while studying part-time and trading contracts and convinced myself along the way that I want to be a corporate lawyer, and that didn't work out. So I was already, as I said, so the plan, it took me 7 years to move, but I had been working on a move of sorts for much longer than that. So 2 years studying, and then I didn't get a training contract, but I also didn't really feel it. I wasn't underbelly thing. I wasn't really motivated.
So it happened for a reason.
So from there on, I decided to study again.
There we go. Another reinvention.
Yes. So I did a master's in human resource development and consultancy and used that as a way of moving into recruitment, HR, etc. So the move out of social care was partially because I wanted more career progression and opportunities. I work for a small charity and the opportunities are limited in small companies anyway. You know, the vicarious trauma is real. My world became very, my worldview, or I was seeing problems everywhere. It wasn't really healthy for me. So I needed to make a shift. I needed to pursue something else where I could feel like I was progressing in my career, but also in a completely different environment.
Yeah. I think anyone working in those kinds of environments, even a friend of mine works in something similar with the police, and it's not a job for life.
But people do. Some people do. I still have old colleagues and friends who still work for the same charity.
Do you? Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, yeah. And senior leaders in our organization, some of them worked in the sector for 30 years. Some people do, but not, it's not for everyone. When you know that about yourself, it's important to have the courage or something, or do something about it.
Yeah, but I do think it is. It is the courage. It really is, certainly from what where you're concerned and what you're talking about. So you moved into a career in HR. All I am thinking is, my goodness, everywhere you're going, you're just acquiring more and more skills. And suddenly now I can see why you have wound up, if you like. I doubt this is the final one, Nerys, but you are currently, well, I can see why you are now a coach, because sort of amalgamating all of that experience and all of your studies and so on,
yes,
and helping women. And so you went into a career in large corporate and HR, and from there you went into coaching and set up your own business.
Yes, that's right. And again, so say my moves and changes are not always 100% planned, but sort of it's me adjusting to whatever's going on in our life. So I worked in recruitment and HR business partnering, and then I was pregnant and my employment came to an end, and I decided to do a certification in executive coaching and mentoring, with the idea of using that to go back to HR once I had my daughter.
Was it you were thinking to go back into?
Yeah, in-house. I thought it's. Mm-hmm. I think it may have become apparent. I study a lot and I keep studying. Most of my investments in life has been in my development in some way or the other. And I guess just to go back about my courage to do things, I think that's how I overcome the fear of making changes, because I preempt challenges by studying and getting the qualification before I make the change.
De-risk it, in inverted commas, by studying it first.
Studying it first, yes, exactly. Because almost all the changes I made, there was an element of studying that sort of I used as, oh, okay, now I have a master's in HR. Now I can try to apply for jobs, right? Whereas some other people can actually make changes or find ways of changing without necessarily doing the qualification first. So, yes, sorry, just to go back to that.
Yeah, no, that's fascinating. I'm really interested in that. I know a number of people who do things like that. So it's almost, that's where the validation comes from. Because if I look at you, your career, it seems to me like, wow, you just make these huge leaps and they land. And if they don't land with you, you move on. But actually, as you say, you're getting that pre-validation.
That's right.
By studying and proving to yourself, yeah, okay, this is the right one for me. That's really, and because law, you went to do that study and no, that wasn't for you. So you didn't make a leap that didn't then work out.
Yeah, so it's in a way, the changes are quite expensive and time.
Yeah, there is that.
It seems like, oh, and Nerys just moves around, but actually.
But equally, it can be very expensive if you make the wrong choice. You know, if you haven't done this, obviously the study, take that away. But making the wrong choices, whether that's work-wise or whatever, there's always some sort of cost to it, whether it's professional or, you know, financial. So now, obviously, you've launched your own coaching business and leveraging all of that knowledge you have about women. What is it that you love about coaching women?
As we've discussed, you know, I've made many changes and all of that, but in all of it and reflecting on all that I've done as well, I came to realize that what I enjoy most is when I'm interacting on a one-on-one basis with individuals and helping them, using my skills, ability to listen and other skills, to help them make changes in their lives. Some way or the other, progressing or seeing something more clearly or making steps or finding a way to move forward in life. Coaching, I realized, helps me to bring so many. And also there's this part of me that's around feeling challenged. So, you know, the sense of achieving things that are overcoming difficulties and all of that. So running my own business, which is around me working with individuals, so the combination of the challenges of running a business on your own and the content of the work, with every interaction, I'm feeling that, you know, that conversation, it made a difference. Running my own coaching practice brings all of those things together.
Yeah, it does seem like the natural sort of place for you to be, certainly right now anyway.
Absolutely. Yes, and you know, with regards to right now, as I said, we've moved and we're moving again. And that was another reason why this move was difficult, because I did spend 5 years of my life building a network from basically knowing 3 or 4 people in Hong Kong, literally knowing hundreds of people. I spent an enormous amount of time. I enjoy doing it, but it took a lot of time, a lot of effort. So when this move conversations came about, I was really dreading it. I just thought, wow, no, I can't. What, really? Do we have to do this right now? I feel like my networking is finally starting to pay off. But interestingly, my work from Hong Kong has picked up since we've moved as well.
Has it? So yes. Actually, the cross-border doesn't make any difference.
No, absolutely. Mm. And so that's been a big learning for me as well, and sort of a validation of the choice that I made a while ago to do this. You know, the leap of faith, because that felt really, starting from my own, that was the biggest leap of faith. Because although, as I said, I did do the qualification in coaching, it doesn't teach you how to run a coaching business. All of that I've had to learn somehow myself and experience it. And I'm still learning, as some parts of it, because there's a lot of marketing. There's a lot of marketing involved. And even though I do it and I took myself through another qualification to try to do it better, it's
of course
so
you did, Noreen. Of course, yeah, you did.
No, I don't take the easy route. I don't make my life easy, but I think it pays off, right? So I think the moral of the story is that there's lots of changes and all of that, but it takes a lot of effort.
Mm. The interesting thing, so you were talking about your network and not being ready to sort of uproot all of that and move overseas. That's exactly, from what you said earlier, that's exactly the same sort of emotion that your daughter was feeling. I mean, okay, we don't call it a network when you're 5, but it, you know, just very, so obviously what you were feeling is just very, very human. But I suppose I have to try and see some sort of silver lining from the last 2 years. And this idea that actually, and I know a lot of the coaches on our platform, they have gone from only working with clients sort of in and around where they are based to now really the whole world is their potential client base, because people are very willing to be to have conversations, even very personal ones like coaching on Zoom or wherever, whatever platform it may be. So yeah, that's really interesting. Well, thank you very much indeed for your time, and it's been fascinating, and I wish you all the best with your next move, wherever that may be.
Thank you. No, and just as a final note on that point, that my coaching, I do specialize in helping people make changes, because I've not only bring that experience, but also
you've lived and breathed it.
Tools that are really useful. And as I said, I know they work because I...
You've used them. You're still here to tell the stories.
Yes, no. But thank you very much, Jane. It's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you too.
What an interesting conversation. Noreen is one of the most well-qualified women and certainly most well-qualified coaches that I've ever met. You can find out more about her and even coaching with Noreen over on our website. Grab your pens. It's www.careeringintomotherhood.com. Thank you to Noreen and to all our listeners. Please don't forget to give us a follow and leave a review. Until next time.